Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 345 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
345? That many? I'm doing pretty good.
Right. I was actually before the thing that you didn't hear because we edited it out. I was going to say, we're almost at a point where the number of the show doesn't matter.
I think it's always been that way. It's about the talk, Joe. The talk.
But, you know, it's once you have this many podcasts under your belt and, you know, we combine the numbering of all the other shows and, you know, backed it in and we changed the numbering and all that sort of stuff, you know, even if we just title the episodes the date.
That'll really mess people up.
Yeah, I think you actually have to have episode numbers in there, sadly.
Or else it'll be all over the place.
Yeah. I think it messes something up with, like, those pod catchers that people use.
Yeah, so let's just keep going with the numbers.
All right. That means I have to read.
Oh. Don't you have to read comics to do this show, too?
I like reading comics, though, but I don't like reading my stuff.
Ah, and comics Twitter.
I love comics Twitter. How dare
Me
you?
Me, too. I know. You love everything.
I do. So, speaking of things that I love, Todd, we have comic book stuff to talk about today.
Do we? Wow.
Right. A big voting result that will please a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And we jokingly talked about a couple weeks ago on the Longbox Heroes After Dark, the NFL Superstar Shakeup. Well, it seems as though DC had an editorial Superstar Shakeup over the weekend as well.
Wow.
That, combined with conventions, a ton of digital sales, new freebies available in that neck of the woods, what we read this past week, including all new Guardians of the Galaxy number one, Guardians of the Galaxy Mother Entropy, and a preview review book that will be revealed a little bit later on in the episode. What we're looking forward to coming out this week... Also, our Todd and Joe Have Issues book, talking about Sam and Twitch, number 14. As well as discussion of last week's episode of The Flash, a controversial episode of The Flash.
Yes, very.
And if you didn't get enough Guardians of the Galaxy talk in what we read last week, we're also going to discuss, at length, I'm sure, Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
For some reason, Volume 2.
I don't like calling it Volume 2. It's 2.
What? No, but James Gunn.
I like James Gunn, but I don't know. It's Guardians of the Galaxy 2. That's what it is.
This is a Guardians of the Galaxy heavy-laden show.
Right. And we'll see how that pans out for us.
Right.
So, moving right along with the show, as mentioned, a voting happened, Todd.
And that's never rigged. Go ahead.
Okay, so are you calling foul on this?
No, the only election voting I ever call foul on is the Longbox Heroes presidential election. All other votes are kosher with me.
So the folks who make the Star Wars toys had a poll to see who would be the next character to be added into their figure line.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was brought to the attention of Kieran Gillen, who writes Star Wars books for Marvel, that one of his characters was on the list, that being Dr. Aphra, who even had her own variant cover back when she was a supporting character in the Darth Vader book before she became her own ongoing character.
She had one of those action figure variants, is that what you mean?
Right.
Right.
So he took to Twitter, pleaded for people to vote, and wouldn't you know who won the pony? She won. So, for the first time in a very long time, they are going to be making a character from the, at least since the Disney takeover, a character who is not directly in the TV, like the cartoons or the movies.
Right. The last time they did that was way back in the Extended Universe figures.
Right. And that was like, they did like a whole line of Shadow the Empire figures.
Right. And they did like Grand Admiral Thrawn and Mara Jade. But, hey, I look at it, and when people, you know, you ask me if the fix was in, I don't, if you got the clout, use it. If you're, you know, throw it out there, tell your friends and family on the social medias that I want my character made into a thing, and boom, go ahead. That's, I'm fine with it. So good for him. I hope he sees a penny or two because it was his figure.
Right.
I don't know how all that works. If it was me, I would be using the Longbox Heroes accounts to just be like, hey, vote for the Todd action figure. You know, I'm fine with it.
One of these days when we have enough pull,
mm-hmm.
That is something that we need to do, is harangue some company and get all of our followers behind us to do something. We've tried it a couple times, and it hasn't panned out very well. We just don't have the clout yet.
We're getting close. If we can get those episodes up over 1,000.
Right. When they see how many episodes we've done, then they'll know.
When they see 345, give those guys a contract.
Give those guys a cookie puss.
Oh, I'd even take a Fudgy the Whale.
Mm-hmm. Side note.
Okay.
Have you gotten a chance to watch any of the new Mystery Science Theaters that are on?
No.
Okay. So they harken back to the pre-sci-fi episodes of Mystery Science Theater, where before the movie they do the invention exchange.
Right.
And then one of the episodes, the Mad Scientist Invention Exchange, was the Carvel Fudgy the Whale clock.
Right.
Because it's the same pan, they just turn it different ways for different cakes, right?
Right, yep.
So for all 12, you know, numbers on the clock, it was a different month, and it was a different themed cake for that month using the Fudgy the Whale pan, depending on which way you turned it.
Okay.
It was really funny. And I think the Carvel account even tweeted it out.
Oh, you gotta love when they get the humor and tweet that out.
Right.
Like Arby's.
But we haven't looked at the Arby's one in a while. Remember we did the fish sandwich gimmick?
Yeah, we thought we were going to get some traction there.
Yeah, we didn't.
But that floundered, that fish thing.
Anyway. So, DC, again, it's been a slow news week. DC shook up all their editors this past week.
Mm-hmm.
They moved, they divided things up. They kind of gave each, so Bobby Chase is still in charge. Bob Harris is under her. Pat McCollum is going to specifically be doing the superhero stuff. Mark Doyle is going to be doing Vertigo and Young Animal, the guy from Chemical Romance's stuff.
Right.
Okay. And then Bobby Chase, again, she's the top, she's handling everything else. So in that everything else, that includes, like, Wildstorm, the Hanna-Barbera stuff, the DC Kids stuff, Digital First, et cetera. But also under that is that they're going to be launching another Young Readers imprint next year. I guess separate from the Johnny DC one, which right now I think is an occasional Balthazar and Franco thing. And the Scooby-Doo book.
Hmm. I get confused on all that. And actually, I've never been... Very rarely have I ever even known who the editor was on the books that I like.
Right. That's... So, that's a very interesting thing because we talked about Comics Twitter earlier and how much we both love Comics Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a point now where there are people who get perturbed when you promote something, you as a fan, you as a reader of whatever, and you say, oh, here's this book by blank that I like, and you tag, let's say, the writer in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why aren't you tagging the colorist? Well, why aren't you tagging the editor? Why aren't you tagging the assistant editor in it? Like, why aren't you tagging everyone who's involved in it? It's not just the writer that makes the book.
Right.
And I am a little more aware of editors than I was, let's say, like 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Only because it's people that I've seen kind of come up through the ranks like this, you know, with this DC shakeup. But it's tough to keep track of who's where and when at any time. You know, obviously I can look in the book, of course. But a lot of times when I'm tweeting stuff out, I may not have the book right at my fingertips to be able to do that. The person might not be on Twitter. I know a lot of times, like, I know for me at least, when I tweet out the show, mm-hmm. I'll definitely make sure to tag the writer, the artist, and if there's room, the publisher.
Well, now with the new Twitter ways, you can even add more people.
Oh, you can?
Without losing 140 characters. I don't know. Isn't there something that way?
They claim that, but it's every time that I do that, I run out of characters.
I don't know. There's something weird with that. But I'm like that. Like, when if people get perturbed with me, it's like, you know who I'm pushing this book for? The person that I throw, that I tweet out. You know what I mean? Like, that's usually why I'm doing that. Otherwise, you know, I'll try to get artists and writers. And sometimes I don't even know if the artist or writer has a Twitter account that I can find.
Right. Now, see, for me, a lot of times the artist doesn't have Twitter because a lot of times they might be foreign.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, they don't have a Twitter account. Or they have a Twitter account that is inactive. And by, like, inactive, I mean they haven't tweeted in 2 years.
Or with some of those that they're in a foreign language most of the time.
Right, but if it's at least active but in another language, I'll still include it in there.
Well, that's nice, yeah.
Right, so I only mention this because, one, of course, DC doing something more with young readers, which is something which was really the only thing that was missing from all this Rebirth stuff. Because while everyone loves, say, Batman or loves Harley Quinn or, you know, whatever character it is, it may be tough to give those books to someone who is 5 to 8 years old.
What are you saying? Come here, young one. Try this I Am Suicide Batman issue. I don't see the problem, Joe.
Right. Well, it was a different time, you know, when we were kids. There was no young readers thing. Like, young readers was Archie Comics.
Now, that was super young readers.
Right.
And those were funny books.
They
were comic books. As my mom would always say, Todd, are you still reading them funny books? My mind would just explode with rage on Mother.
Is she talking about Justice League International? How does she know I'm reading that?
That one's funny, so that's okay.
Right. Like, as long as that's the one she means, I'm okay with
that's
that.
That's right. Punisher isn't a funny book.
It's funny when he blows up a dude, but other than that...
That's right. That's right. Bazooka in his shorts, he was hiding.
Oh, my. So, again, it's a light news week.
Yep.
We do a lot to stretch that out, but there are a bunch of conventions this weekend.
Oh, there are?
All over the world, Todd. There is a Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario, California, which is a surprise to me that there was an Ontario, California.
Oh, what about Off-Tario?
No.
No?
That was worse than our stretching of the news segment.
Okay.
This one has a nice mix, you know, of artists, comic people, and people that would appeal to me. Chris Bacalo is like the featured artist there.
Love Chris Bacalo.
Right, but such comic or such movie folk that are going to be there are Bill Moseley.
That's the guy from The House of a Thousand Corpses?
Look at you knowing stuff.
Boom!
And David Naughton.
I don't know who that is.
The lead from American Werewolf in London.
Ah, I know that movie.
Mm-hmm. There is another convention, the Tidewater Convention, and again, they have a little bit more media guests than the other one. They've got John Wesley Shipp, Violet Bean.
I don't know who that
and
is.
You're going to ask who's Violet Bean. She plays Jesse Quick.
Oh, okay.
Right. And that's in Virginia Beach, Virginia, but also at that one, a little bit more bigger name comic folks. Your Chris Claremonts, your Neil Adams, favorite of the show here in Robert Venditti.
Yes.
And there's a few wrestlers sneaking in there as Hacksaw Jim Duggan is on the panel as well.
I hope he's selling small pieces of 2x4 that are autographed.
I don't know what Hacksaw Jim Duggan does at conventions. I'd be afraid to ask.
He does that. He sells little pieces of 2x4 that are autographed. And it's funny because he'll... I like when I've seen him at the New York Con. He was at the New York Con, and he does the, I don't know if you know this, Joe, he'll put the 2x4 over his shoulder and yell, ho, and it'll attract the crowd, and you can hear it on the floor, and it's quite, interesting. You're like, oh, he's drumming up attention. Mm-hmm. I will give him that. And the people come to see him, whether they buy the pieces of 2x4, I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you about that. So there's also a convention happening in Phillipsburg, New Jersey, at the Phillipsburg High School. Now admission is $5, and this is a big comic convention one. The aforementioned Franco of Art and Franco is going to be there. Joe Kelly, who I'm a huge fan of, is going to be there. Both Walt and Louise Simonson are going to be there.
Oh.
Amongst many, many others. But, again, this is a comic book convention being held at a high school where entry is $5, and it's some really big names in comic books are going to be at this.
I'm guessing they live nearby.
I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So... if I did not have super secret science work this weekend, I would probably be at that one. I know the one that Todd would be at, if any of them, would be the one across the border in the Ottawa Comic-Con, not Ottawa, California, but Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. That's what confused me about that other one.
Where the betrayal happened.
That's right, the Ottawa betrayal. For me, George Romero is going to be there.
The Joker from the old Batman TV show.
Now, see, when you say stuff like this, I don't feel as bad when I say that Capaldi guy is going to be at this one, too.
Okay.
Huh? How do you like it now?
It's not fun when it's on the other shoe foot, is it?
It might be.
Okay. It's my favorite stuff to put in soup is the Capaldi's.
So, links to all of those conventions will be in the show notes if you're picking up the show anyway, especially through the website or through the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you could find out information about all the shows that are part of the soon-to-be-named network. And Todd, there's a bucket load of them. There's, of course, this show, Long Box Heroes After Dark, where I have a very special message at the end of the show. Prodigal Sons podcast, Prime Defective, Fresher in Parlance, who actually did an interesting thing last week where they compared Google searches, like what has more results on Google.
Okay.
And it was very interesting to see like between like cat versus dog or things like that. But then they did like Fresher versus Parlance, like what had more Google results.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So it was a very fun segment.
Let's never do that on this show, because I can imagine Joe Sposto reigns supreme on the internet.
I bet if I wonder if Joe Sposto or my previous fake name would have more hits.
Oh, your previous fake name.
Uh-huh.
I would guarantee, I'd almost guarantee that.
Let me see.
Oh.
Now, should I use Google or should I use the preferred Bing?
Well, if you're going to try to get the Google reference, then, but I don't care. Bing it, Google it. Ask Jeeves, I don't care.
Now, I will say this. While it does include results for a Joe Esposito, my Twitter is the second thing that comes up.
Well, that's because you've changed it to that. And you have all that cachet from the Leonard F. Chikarson days.
Now, I think it's because... Okay, so let me do just results for Joe Sposto. Okay. So I did just results for Joe Sposto, and that comes up as 18,000 results.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Leonard F. Chikarison only comes up at 3,110 results.
Oh my goodness.
So I've overtaken
your ghost.
Right.
And what is Todd? What does Todd come up with? Just do
just
me real
Todd?
Quick. Yeah, just Todd. No, Todd Broker. Love Broker.
$1,280.
Ugh. I'm a shadow on the interwebs.
Now, we're kind of off track here, because I should need to continue the plugs, which I will. I'll just go Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron, Talkin' Gimmicks, and Aim Downsize Podcast. Anytime those shows come out live, or anytime any of the people on those shows are on other shows, as long as they remind me, I will post it on the site.
Okay.
Okay, so, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. You, unless you are, you, Todd Roker, your Twitter is the second result that comes up.
Right.
The first result is an IMDb for a Todd Roker.
Okay.
Who was in the movie Selfie Nation.
I was in the movie Selfie Nation.
Were you really?
Yes, that's me.
And you played Mother Goose?
Yes. Yes.
Why have I not seen this movie?
I actually have a DVD of several movies that my cousin made for local, like, film. What's the words I'm looking for? That people would make little films and they would show them at local theaters for fun. Like, I can't think of the word.
Short films?
Not short films, but like, not a convention, but whatever. But they would just do that, and then people would put it out there, and there was this like little like umbrella name for it and everything. I'll have to talk to my cousin about what it was all called.
A film festival?
That's what it was, a festival. Sorry, my brain froze up because I found out I was on IMDb. But yes, they would have these little film festivals, and he would do these little movies, and he would always call me because, you know, I was easy to get as a get, and he would pay me in pizza. You're shocked.
I see that it's only a 9-minute short.
Right.
So I definitely need to see this short.
And there are other movies. There is probably like 4 other movies that I'm in.
Oh boy.
The Magic Nut. I'm trying to think.
They're not on your IMDb though.
They're not, but I do have a burned DVD he made for me around here somewhere. Are we going to have to discuss this off air at some point and work on something?
We're going to have to do something, Todd.
Right, okay. We are really off course here.
Right, that's okay. So, links to all those, show notes, all the conventions, show notes, all the digital sales and freebies will be in the show notes as well. Oh my goodness, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dark Horses, get your pocketbook ready, folks.
Mm-hmm.
So Dark Horse's Alien sale is still ongoing. You know, do what you got to do with that. Marvel is having, well, let's start it this way. Archie is having a sale because I guess this week is the season finale of the Archie TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So most of that new Archie stuff is all up there on sale. And when I say the new Archie stuff, I mean whether it be trades or single issues of the Mark Waid Archie book, the new Betty and Veronica book, the Jughead book, the new Josie and the Pussycats book, Afterlife with Archie, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and all of that stuff is available on sale. If you don't already own it, and I think some of that stuff, as we had talked last week, if you sign up for the Comixology Unlimited, the first 6 issues of the main Archie series, Afterlife with Archie and Sabrina, are all part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Image, I guess, is also because they're very happy about their Eisner nominations, are having a sale as well. on Plutona, Outcast, Descender, Criminal, Paper Girl, and Saga. Have you ever heard any of these books, Todd?
A few here or there.
So whether you get them in trade or single issues, all of those are on sale as well. Marvel, not to be outdone, is having a sale on what they consider their best-selling collections. Just some of the things that jump out on this one is it's a lot more newer stuff. Stuff that's been released within, let's say, the last like 4 to 5 years. But the first trade of the Tom King Vision series is in there. Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom, Triumph, and Torment is in there. Talked about in a previous episode of Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't buy it then, buy it now. Planet Hulk. The entire thing of Planet Hulk is available for $8.
Oh my goodness, that's pretty good.
And also available for $8. And again, if I had $8 in my hand right now, somebody would need to take it away from me because I would be split on whether or not to purchase Planet Hulk for $8 or Maximum Carnage for $8.
Oh, jeez.
My goodness. But Marvel is also having another sale that is called Road to Secret Empire. Now, everyone relax. We're not going to talk about Secret Empire. But it's more so of a way of like, hey, here's a bunch of Nick Spencer stuff that's on sale. Hey, Nick Spencer, he wrote Superior Foes of Spider-Man, and he also wrote the Ant-Man books. Those are included in this sale. Superior Foes of Spider-Man is one of the best comics of all time. It's on sale. Go buy it. It's fantastic.
Plugs. Just got the push.
And Ant-Man's nothing to sneeze at, neither. Oh, man. And there's new freebies available as well. Dynamite has the first issue, a zero issue, of their Sword Quest book. Todd, are you aware of the video game Sword Quest?
I've heard of it.
Dynamite has the license to do Atari 2600 games.
Mm-hmm.
As comic books, Sword Quest being the first. I think Centipede is going to end up being the second. And I heard an interview with one of the writers of the Sword Quest book, Chris Sims, friend of mine. And in the interview, Dynamite gave him a list of every Atari game that Atari published.
Mm-hmm.
And said, pick a couple and give us some pitches.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, if he, you know, and he said that he had a really good pitch for a couple off-the-wall books.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you could have submitted a pitch for, like, tennis.
Oh, God.
And Dynamite could have published a book based on the Atari 2600 game Tennis.
Oh. I just want to write Kaboom, but go ahead.
I think, was Kaboom Atari or was that Activision?
That might have been Activision. You're right.
Now, if I can get the Activision license, I'm all over a Pitfall Harry book.
Oh.
But anyway, the zero issue of Sword Quest, available for free. The first issue of the Nathan Edmondson Black Widow book that you liked very much, that's available for free. Captain America Reborn, the beginning of the end of Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America, that's available for free. A Bruce Jones penned miniseries about the Kingpin from the early 2000s, the first issue of that is for free. And a Fabian Nicenza 8-issue series about Hawkeye, the first issue of that is for free. The subtitle of that book, Todd,
right,
is Hawkeye, the High Hard Shaft.
Oh my goodness.
And all I'm reading is what it says right on the cover of the book, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give me no guff, you.
I'm just saying. I'm clutching my pearls right now.
So links to all of those will be in the show notes. And I try to keep my eyes peeled for when the stuff from Free Comic Book Day comes available. And I'll be sure to include that as that stuff becomes available. Todd, let's get into talking about comic books. I'm going to ask you to start with talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Mother Entropy #1.
by written by Jim Starlin, drawn art by Alan Davis. Basically, it's a simple story. Starts out with the Guardians of the Galaxy have run up tabs all around nowhere, so they're trying to figure out how they can slide out of paying all this money because everybody's headhunting for them. And before they can leave, the cops from nowhere decide, well, we know what you're doing, and we're going to give you an out. We'll pay you to transfer this priest guy with his relic to a planet somewhere. We can't do it because, you know, this planet has treaties and stuff. We can't do it without getting into all kind of political trouble, but you can do it. We'll cover all your debts and we'll do it. While Pip the Troll from the cosmic characters decides that this relic that they have, he needs to steal it, and you know, hilarity ensues. It's a really straightforward story that, you know, that's going to be 4 or 5 issues. I'm not 100% sure. And it's going to be weekly, which blew my mind. I found that out. But it's not a very inventive story by Jim Starlin. I think they're just, you know, cashing in on maybe a movie that's coming out. Because I love Jim Starlin. I will always buy a Jim Starlin book. But even when I've read the last couple of Thanos things and he's doing the modern take of the Guardians of the Galaxy, it just seems a little out of his wheelhouse and not what he knows, because all the characters end up being pretty much goofy the same. So in the end, it's a story. If you're a Jim Starlin fan, get it. If you're not, I can't recommend this as a great Guardians of the Galaxy story to start off. I'm just getting it out of a big love for Jim Starlin. I prefer when he writes Thanos. So that's my take on this issue.
Do we know who Mother Entropy is yet?
No, other than the fact that there seems to be this new... Oh, Jim Starlin created a new cosmic character, by the way. Shocker. Spoiler alert. So, yes, this character shows up and it seems to be drawing people in on different planets. But that's another story. Not another story, but that's completely separate from the Guardian story at this point. And I know that they're going to come together somehow. But right now, it's just a quick, like, this cosmic entity is showing up on this planet, and that's all we know, and gathering people to her. And then it's like, here we are in the nowhere. So I'm like, yeah, I know this will come together, but I don't know how yet. So, but like I said, it's a very straightforward story.
Did you read, as well, All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Because Jim Starlin didn't write that one.
Okay. Written by Jerry Duggan with art by Aaron Cooter, who sadly would get, as we talked about before, on the Marvel website, no artist credited on the book.
Well, it's just they'll get around to that.
So this, I can't say picks up where the Bendis book left off. Because this is just kind of like a restructuring of the book. Giving each character like a little quirk. It's putting them on the opposite side of Galactic Law, which is the Nova Corps. And it's them on a giant heist in between the Collector and the Grandmaster. Of course, to kind of tie into the movies. And you talked about the Mother Entropy book being put out because there's a movie out. This is the team that's in the movie. It's the 5 main characters. It's tying into stuff from the previous movie and stuff going forward in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the Grandmaster in there.
So now let me ask you a question, because the Mother Entropy is the comic book versions. It is the ones that are in the movie, but that's the Guardians of the Galaxy. That's it was in the Bendis book anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Well,
so
now yes and no, because you know, obviously the one in the Bendis book also had, like, Ben Grimm on the team, and it also had Kitty Pryde on the team. And Peter Quill was, like, the prince of a planet and all this other jazz, you know?
But this here is the one that read is like, more the cinematic universe, like, that story? Or they're just more aping it?
It's more aping it. And by that I mean Groot is a baby in this.
Oh, okay. See, in Mayan, it's just straight up like this would be those characters.
It was the main five.
Gotcha. I see what you're saying.
Right. So everyone kind of similar to the film, which we will discuss a little bit later on. Everyone except for Peter Quill has something going on. I don't want to say like a mystery, but everyone's up to something. Like Rocket's being secretive about something, and we don't know what it is yet. For some reason, Drax is not getting physically involved with the fights. Mm-hmm. Gamora is hiding something as well. But again, of course, they were tasked with getting a little... And again, it's always something with cosmic books where it's like, oh, this little thing is... if you open it, it's a universe in and of itself. And if you open it, it'll try to overwrite our universe. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those sort of things. That old chestnut they dust off. But that's what the Grandmaster is having them go out and get before the Collector does.
Right.
But then there's the cliffhanger at the end of the book where they're going to explain, at least in comic book continuity, why Groot is still a baby. Or at least small. Like, I don't think he's a baby in this, like he was kind of sort of in the movie. Where, why is he still small? Like, that's going to be the crux of an upcoming story arc.
Well, you gotta do that. You gotta make everything work together. Continuity, Joe.
Right. So, again, I went into this book a little trepidatious, but I ended up enjoying it because it was fun. I really like Aaron Cooter's art. And, yeah, it was a light, fun book, and it gave me a bunch of little plot threads that I'm interested to see on what they end up doing with them.
Hmm. Then out of the two Guardians books, I say people go with the one you read.
There you go. So our preview review book this week, did I say that correctly?
Preview review.
Is from Image Comics, which actually is the first Image comic book that Cullen Bunn has ever done. We talked about a Cullen Bunn book from a few weeks ago with The Damned. Now his new book, Regression, with art by Danny Lukert. The crux of this book is bugs. No. There is a character, Adrian, who keeps hallucinating and keeps seeing bugs everywhere. Falling from the sky, in toilets, all over him. Coming out of people's faces and things like this. And one would be surprised, that is affecting him greatly. So, a friend of his suggests that he go to a hypnotist, and he's skeptical, especially when he goes and sees that the hypnotist she recommended is kind of like a stand-up comedian hypnotist. Where it's like, I'm gonna hypnotize a room full of people and make them all think they're naked, sort of thing.
It's the nightclub hypnotist.
Right. So, he does the hypnotist thing, and it ends up making things worse for everyone involved.
It seems to open up something, whether it's real, psychosis, we don't know what it is. It kicked it up a notch.
Right. So what did you think of this book?
I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will give it visual points for being very over the top when it comes to its horror.
Mm-hmm.
Like right from the beginning, you know, the like you joked about the bugs and the maggots and all that other stuff. After a while... that's not really for me. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, come on now.
No, I know, but it's just one of those, like, as it was going on, it was horror, and I like the story, but I don't know. It was the visuals were truly horrific, but that's not my bag of tricks. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. Of the things that he does, I would prefer to read The Damned of the two. But like I said, it's a good story. If you're a horror fan, it's probably more for you. But I don't know. What did you think?
I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a slow burn, of course. You know, the character Adrian, we get to see a little bit of what's going on with him. But then obviously, as you mentioned, whatever happened with the hypnosis appears to have shook something loose. I really like the art. I know you did not like all the bugs and all that sort of jazz. However, I felt as though, and again, you may need to correct me, I was trying to place where I felt, like who I felt Lukert's art felt like to me.
Mm-hmm.
but at least his, you know, obviously his faces, his people, I'm not going to say exactly, but were similar to that of a Tony Harris type style.
Kind of. I don't have the it right in front of me, so okay. I'd have to look again, but I could kind of see what you're saying.
Right, so he's done some stuff here and there. He's done a book called Aphelion for Red 5 Comics. He did a book called Haunted for Image and another book called Tethered, but this is the first time I've ever seen anything of his stuff, and I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And I read the little, you know, a lot of these books these days, especially the Image books, will have like the wall of text sort of thing of the writer or the creative team or whatever kind of introducing you to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that Cullen Bunn, prior to his comic book days, did a whole bunch of like weird, odd jobs and so forth. And his father was a hypnotist. So when he was a kid, he would get Cullen in on the act. So there was one specific instance that his father had with a teenager that he hypnotized that was the inspiration for this book.
I didn't know that.
Yes, so that little thing, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of times I don't read those. This time I did, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is where the inspiration for this book comes from. Very interesting. Very, very neat. Very neat. So, I'm a Cullen Bunn fan. This book was getting put on the list, sight unseen, so I didn't fear that it was going to be bad or not good or what have you, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And this is, like I said, a preview review book. So this book, number one, comes out today, if you're listening to this, when this show drops. So check it out if you got some extra space to be picking stuff up.
There you go.
So moving on away from what we read last week to what we're looking forward to coming out this week, if you head over to longboxheroes.com, we put up the pull post every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, which is a link to all of the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your house, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. Now, two of the things that we've been doing with the pull post in the calendar year 2017 is one that we've done for a long time, which is attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is still up on me by one with 9 correct guesses. We're also keeping a tally of not only how many books we're purchasing, but also broken out by publisher as well. And Todd, it's tied.
Oh boy.
As of this week, we will have both purchased the exact same number of comic books in the calendar year 2017.
Which I find truly shocking. I don't mean that in a bad way.
I knew it would be close.
Okay.
I didn't think like one of us would be way ahead, like over 10. Like, come the end of the year, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, I assume come the end of the year, one of us would be up by, like, 5-9 over the other.
Okay.
But to be in the second week of May and be in a dead heat, I was shocked.
It's a race now.
It's anyone's ball game. There's no prize, but
There should be a prize.
That we have to honor the 2 steak dinners that we owe each other.
That's right. Somehow I'll owe you a third steak dinner.
Okay. So I start, so I'm going to guess that you are most looking forward to coming out the Star Wars Screaming Citadel book.
No, it is The Fix.
Ah, The Fix number 9. Yes.
I'm going to guess, is your book The Fix?
My book is Screaming Citadel.
Oh, we got it backwards.
Yes. The Fix is a book we talk about all the time. And then Screaming Citadel is the beginning of another Star Wars crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time that they did this with the Vader Down one, it was really good. This one has been built up more as a Dr. Aphra sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'll be honest with you, I haven't been loving the Yoda story.
Right.
That was going on in the main Star Wars book, only because Yoda's dialogue doesn't read as well as it translates into the spoken word.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to, we're in the trust tree here, as we always say on the show, is I was never a Yoda fan. Never.
What?
I was like, Yoda's down on my list of favorite characters. So when we got to this Yoda storyline, I thought it was cool in the fact that he goes off like to do his own thing and we don't see much of him. But by the end, I was like, yeah, okay. The dialogue and stuff like that. I'd like to get back to Luke and Han and Leia, you know, the characters I'm buying this book for.
And that's what Screaming Citadel is going to do.
Right.
And if we could work the schedule out, we may have a guest on next week's show to discuss not only how the Star Wars comics got him reading other comics, but also his more than probably anyone that I know's obsessive fandom of Star Wars.
Wow.
That's a tease. Now that I've put it out in the ether, we have to try to make it happen.
Oh, yes. And by we, that means you while I do nothing.
Right. The way everything happens on this show.
Wow. So that's what the underside of a bus looks like.
Hey, listen, I could have very easily kept that extra 20% for me.
Well, you would have earned it, I'll tell you the truth. And unless you're ticking off creators, I don't know. That could be a whole other thing.
Apparently I'm not, so we're good.
I'm just saying, just stuff popping up on my phone, but go ahead.
Uh-oh. Yeah, oh.
Remember, I get the DMs that you get from certain accounts.
That solved that riddle from before.
There you go.
So, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other things that are there, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past pull posts, past Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything that we've ever done exists on the internet, and it will be there forever.
That's right, till the sun burns out.
And while you're over, and I think even then there might be some servers left that have our stuff on it.
That's right. I think it's sending it out into space where aliens by then will be getting hot takes on comics.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out our little store button as well. Purchase stickers or shirts with our fancy logo on them. And if you already have one or don't want one, which I don't know why you wouldn't, want one, I mean, of course. You can always click on our Amazon link at the top of the page. Anything you purchase through Amazon, we get a little bit of a kickback, and those little nickels and pennies add up, just like Gene Simmons would say.
Okay.
So, notable purchases this past week, speaking of Star Wars, someone purchased an HD digital download of Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Ooh.
Someone also purchased the Marvel 75th Anniversary Omnibus. And someone also purchased a slider kit adapter model for Suppentown room air conditioners.
Oh, Suppentown.
Suppentown.
Suppentown. It's like when I ride the escalators, I go Suppentown.
Oh, man.
What? My jokes aren't landing this episode?
I think it was all downhill after the flounder remark.
Oh, that was my favorite one, but go ahead.
Okay. So, we have Todd and Joe Have Issues to talk about this week. Unless it was a Todd's art attack that I missed.
No, I would never let you miss a Todd's art attack. Okay.
So our book this week was Sam and Twitch number 14, which, as Todd mentioned last week, is the egg issue.
Mm-hmm.
So Sam and Twitch, two hard-boiled cop detectives, etc., from the Spawn universe.
Hard-boiled.
You got it. Right, because yeah. It's the egg thing. See, that's when it works, when you do it seamlessly.
Wow.
And you're so dumb, you say things and you don't realize what you're saying.
Did you not? You didn't know? That's
absolutely
the best
not.
Part. Okay, go ahead.
So, they get their own spinoff. Spinoff lasts for a while, then they get another spinoff of the spinoff when a different writer comes on. But this is the book where many people were first exposed to Brian Michael Bendis. Because this was a book at the time where Todd McFarlane and his Spawn Empire was very far, wide, and reaching. And they would really hammer it home of people reading Spawn books should check out everything else. And this book, in the grand scheme of things, had very little to do with Spawn. It was more of a legitimate crime book. So the book starts off with them reading stuff off dumblaws.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they get called to a domestic abuse case where there's a shooting, a killing, and the woman's not talking. And then I forgot. I'm like, oh, this was a short issue. What's going on? And then we get the mid thing, I guess, that explains why the shooting happened.
Right.
And then as I got to that part, it all came flooding back to me. The memories of this issue, Todd.
So you finally pieced it together, huh?
I finally pieced it together, right. Just like Humpty Dumpty.
That's right. You were a shell before you got to the end of this book.
That one was intentional, yes.
Right. But so now you remember why I put this issue on here? Or do you just remember the issue?
I just more remember the issue, but I don't remember the significance of why you put it on there.
Just for me, now this issue doesn't have the impact the second time I read it, because I remember reading it and the mystery of what happened, but I was kind of like reading the first half of the story of the murder and the dumb laws, and you find out that the woman can talk because she tells you why the one dumb law they can't figure out that's going on. And I was like, this is really cool. But it was the second, when I read this for the first time, the second half, and the second half just explained, you now know why the murder happened and how crazy that story gets as it goes on. And I remember reading it, remembering how hot I would have been if I was in that situation too. It would, because Brian Michael Bendis does a brilliant job of telling the story of how the guy gets mad at his girlfriend because of the whole egg thing. And you're like, wow, now we know how it all turns out. And I was like, this was a brilliant mystery in reverse issue at the time. And like I said, it doesn't hold the impact now. But I think if you've never read it, I still think it would hold up. And the other thing I didn't remember was how many F-bombs they dropped in the book. I completely forgot that was suggested for because that was not on my radar of thinking about the book. And as I'm reading, I'm like, oh, Joe and Todd and Joe have issues. And I'm like, holy crap, I forgot about this issue.
Well, but, you know, if you're reading Jessica Jones, you'll remember that, you know, Bendis swearing in a book is old hat. That's something that still kind of goes on.
No, but you know what I mean. But go ahead.
I do. The two things that I wanted to mention about the issue is I forgot how much I didn't care for the lettering in this book.
That was something that popped up, is the way the lettering was done. There are no word balloons.
Mm-hmm.
There are just words with a little line.
Right. I'm sure at the time I didn't mind it, but reading it in 2017, I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like the way this is laid out. It just didn't, you know what I mean? It may have been easier to read, but it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like a comic book.
Felt all kinds of wrong, right, as a comic fan.
Now, the other thing that I want to mention is, if you did read this, like we did, bear in mind this is a book that came out in the early 2000s, like early 2000-00.
Mm-hmm.
Bendis was a different writer at that time. It was a different time. You can't judge. But there was specifically the scene where they were on their way to the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam was getting upset at traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the remarks that he was saying. If those things were in a book in 2017, comics Twitter would have melted.
Yes, but I also stand by, just because a character says those things doesn't mean... do you know what I'm trying to say?
Todd?
Like, that could be the character. He could be a misogynist and a racist. That could be the character.
Todd?
Yes?
I'm with you, but I don't think the rest of the world is with us.
Okay. They're not on our boat?
No. I think if this book gets republished in 2017, there might be some pages missing.
Oh, we don't have those crazy non-word balloons.
Oh, they just showed up at the crime scene. Wasn't there a scene where they drove their car there? Nope.
No. Did you know Sam and Twitch can teleport?
Ride in traffic in New York. It was no problem.
That's right. Sam and Twitch can now teleport.
Oh, Bam. They have teleporters now. All
right. That's right. Bam.
So, to change things up from this harsh fare to a little bit lighter fare, it is a single issue. It's a self-contained story, a little bit bigger than a normal 22-page comic, but smaller than the Triumph and Torment that we had to read a couple weeks ago. This week's Todd and Joe Have Issues is going to be Batman Adventures Mad Love. The Harley Quinn, the first appearance of Harley Quinn in comic books.
Yes.
She had appeared first on the Batman animated series. And they did a one-shot to introduce her into the animated universe comic books. And this is her first appearance. And again, it's more or less her origin story.
I don't believe it was her first appearance in the comics, but I think it was her origin.
Oh, okay, my apologies then.
Because that is a Batman the Animated Series, and I can't think of what number it is, because there's one on the shop wall that goes for a ton of money.
Well, so does this one, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
but not the way the Batman Adventures goes.
Right, touche.
That's officially, I think, her first in comics, and then there's the first in DC regular continuity. It's all crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
where even if you homage the cover of that in DC continuity issue, somehow that means you have a very expensive book on your hands.
If you're talking about the Suicide Squad issue, it went up.
I am, and it did.
And I bought one, but I bought mine on the ground floor because I always get the Lee Brahimo covers just because I like him as an artiste.
Right. So that'll be our Todd and Joe Have Issues for next week. You have 7 days to read it. I'll put the post up on Thursday. Now we are going to get into spoiler-filled talk of both The Flash and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So if you don't care, you didn't watch them, you didn't see them, you don't want things spoiled, we bid you adieu. And we will catch you all here next week. Thanks for listening. Episode 345, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, of course, we are going to be talking about Flash first.
Yes.
We have, what, 4 episodes of Flash left?
Something like that.
Right. So, from the previous week's episode, the future emo wig-wearing Barry tells our Barry that there is a scientist who will eventually create the technology that will be able to trap Savitar. So with this knowledge, they go to try to get this person to help them now. Well, this person, and again, what was her name?
I don't know. I honestly don't.
Tracy Brand.
And I'm wondering if she's... I wonder if she's any relation to the Brands who created the Legion of Superheroes down the line. But that's a whole... RJ Brand or something like that. So, but that's the only thing I can think of as a, as a character, like a descendant or an ancestor of that, if you know what I mean.
So they go to get her, but she is having a crisis of faith. She is looking to leave school because no one gets her. All of her theories are crazy and out there, and no one wants to believe her. They give her some information, and of course, Killer Frost shows up to try to kill her. Killer Frost does her best Bobby Drake impersonation.
I thought that was really cool.
I thought it was a really cool action scene for a TV show.
That's what I was saying. It doesn't have the budget of a Guardians of the Galaxy, but I was like, for what they, I was like, you know what? I'm fine with this. I thought this was really, no pun intended, cool.
Mm-hmm. So, Cisco is with them, but every time he has the opportunity to get the drop off Caitlin, he hesitates, of course, because he still sees her as his friend, not as Killer Frost. And, Joe and his girlfriend, are having some turmoil. So there's your A story, your B story, your C story. And then at the end of the episode, they tell us who Savitar is. Now, last week's episode of this show, things may have got a little heated. Todd said some things that he can't take back. in regards to Savitar and comparing it to Preacher and all this other stuff.
Right.
So I'll let you take point on this. What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the reveal? What did you think of all of it?
Now, I know we're going to say because of the reveal, but I really didn't like this episode because in the grand scheme of things, a lot of storytelling doesn't make sense to me. And I granted we have four episodes left to explain it. The first thing that I don't like, and they even talk about it, is Wally's off on Earth, whatever, with his girlfriend, Jesse Quick. And even somebody says, like, is now really the, like, we're on a countdown clock to save Iris and he's off on a date. I was like, that's dumb. As it goes, I did like HR, trying to, you know, get a girlfriend. I thought that was the best part of the episode, was him doing his thing, and it was great. And the reveal, granted, because I like Savitar, I think it's stupid, and it really makes no sense to me of the whole thing of, I'm sad because Iris was killed, so let me make my past self sad, so I'm going to kill Iris? I really don't understand anything that's going on, and it. I don't know. I'm, like, so confused, and I don't like it.
So, again, we're in spoiler talk. So, Savitar is... it's okay. He's 7 years in the future, bad wig-wearing emo Barry.
That, I guess, okay, to tell you the truth. Right. Because he helps him...
The main difference between the two is... He has, like, some sort of weird scarring on his face.
Right.
So, one would lead you to believe that this happens after the 7 years from now wig-wearing Barry.
Right.
I think what they're attempting to do with this reveal... And again, I don't love this reveal. But they still have four more episodes to kind of... clarify things to the best of their ability, and we do give the show a lot of leeway, to be honest with you.
Right.
So, one could think that what they're attempting to do is retread the Eobard Thawne storyline from the comics, where in the future, Eobard Thawne is obsessed with Barry Allen, but he must become the Reverse Flash, and travel back to the time to set that chain of events into action.
Right. And
whereas
I guess.
Something happens to 7 years in the future, Emo Barry, say a day later or years later, that causes him to say, for XYZ to happen, I must go back to that point and become the thing that I hate. To create, right. Like, that time circle to happen. You know what I mean?
Right. And the thing that I think I dislike the most about this, and I think it nails why, even though, like, I don't mind when you change something. If it's good, it's as good or better than the thing that you... that it was. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
I'm fine with that. Like, when people say, oh, well, Iron Man was never like that in the comic until Robert Downey... I'm like, well, Robert Downey Jr. is a better character than anything I read in old Iron Man comics.
Absolutely.
More like, you know, more anime. So I forgive the change. With Savitar, it's like, I like the Savitar character from the comic, and then on top of that, this is the third time we've seen this story on The Flash.
Right.
It's Speedster shows up, mystery of who he is, you find out that it's someone close to the team. And it just keeps getting closer to the point of, now it is The Flash. And I'm like, yeah, like, I've seen this story twice, and each time it's diminishing results. And this one, I'm like, I just don't care, because now it's 1,000 times worse than what it was to me. And I've checked out. I really don't care. I'm more interested in some of these subplots than I am the main Savitar story, and I hope they're 100% correct when they say next season, no time traveling, no speedsters as an overarching villain. I'm fine with the speedster showing up, like Reverse Flash coming back and doing one episode and then gone. But right now, we need to stop this because I've seen this story twice already.
Now, see, I don't follow along with like stuff like that, so mm-hmm. I did not see them say they were not going to do that for next season.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
Oh, how dare you.
Right.
But all in all, I'm invested this much. I'm interested to see how they kind of explain their way out of this one.
Right. I'm in for the next four episodes because usually the cliffhanger is something interesting. Hopefully it'll be he either saves or kills one of his parents. Because we haven't seen that before.
Oh, boy.
Do you see what I'm trying to say now? You yes. see where I'm
there,
going?
There is a...
pattern.
There is a horror B-movie reviewer that I'm a big fan of mm-hmm. who posted a very funny thing on Facebook after last week's episode came out.
Right.
And just kind of pointing out all the foibles of this.
Right.
And somebody else I saw sum it up much more succinctly as, for people who know the exact moment and the exact place where Iris will die, mm-hmm. with multiple time travelers, they are sure wasting a lot of time from preventing this from happening.
Yep. And I had the, and I actually had the reveal stooged off to me.
Uh-oh.
Because the way it was put was they were like, didn't you find it interesting that Savitar is just a major storyline with Adam Warlock? And I went, oh, so it's Barry. I don't know if you know the Magus from the Adam Warlock storyline.
I do not.
He's basically, that's, to me, that's the first that I recall. Like, they've done it since where there's a future evil version of someone. And I think probably the most famous to most comic people is the Maestro, with the Hulk.
Yes.
But this was, to me, you go back, and there might be before, but I just don't know it, is the future one, is in the Jim Starlin story with Adam Warlock, is you find out a future version of himself comes back and sets things in motion to create himself, the evil version. And his name, he's a purple-looking Adam Warlock with the name Magus.
Gotcha.
And I was like, they were like, and I knew exactly what it was. And I'm like, I'm going to hate this when I see this. So that's what we got. So it's just a ripoff of Adam Warlock, a Marvel cosmic character.
You need to start cutting these people out of your life.
That is true. But hopefully we'll get a good Adam Warlock someday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of which, nice segue. So, Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Volume 2.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Mama named it 2, I'll call it 2. So, I liked Guardians of the Galaxy 1 a lot. Right. I think in our previous movie discussions, it was my second favorite of the Marvel movies.
Might have even been your first.
No, I think Winter Soldier's still my first. Okay. But Winter Soldier. Like it was one of those things where it's like depending on the mood I was in.
Right.
Right. So, this was one of those movies where I did my best to stay away from anything about the movie, to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think it was like a year ago this summer when they revealed that Kurt Russell was going to be playing Ego, the Living Planet.
Right.
I was like, now I really have to work extra hard to prevent this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't... And James Gunn, when he was on the Adam Carolla show last month, just like casually tweets out a picture of Sylvester Stallone. It's like, oh, here's a picture of my Guardians of the Galaxy co-star. And I'm like, Sylvester Stallone's in the movie?
I had no idea.
Right.
Until
like,
right.
So, this movie is, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Star-Lord, Drax, Gamora, Rocket, and Groot going on a mission to prevent these batteries from being stole from these gold people, the sovereign. Mm-hmm. And there's your bare bones of a plot. The rest of it is filled in by all character development stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be stuff with the revelation of who Peter Quill's father is, whether it be stuff with the Ravagers, whether it be stuff with Nebula, all this stuff fills in that fishbone of a plot. So, Todd, what did you think of the movie? Is there anything you would like to say or otherwise before we, you know, kind of go all over the place with the film?
I really enjoyed this movie. I liked the first one a little bit better for story-wise, the way it's told. This one has better moments, but where it falls short, and I love this movie, don't get me wrong, and but I do think it's a schizophrenic movie in that Gunn does some things that I, small things that take me out of the movie. One, I think it's a little too long. A little bit could have been chopped out of it. And I think his humor, he needs to dial back just a little bit. I don't mind having a funny scene to take the tension away, to move to like a bridge work to the next scene. But sometimes he was using it and it was like ruining one or two things for me. And like one of them is, it ruined the sovereign villain, the female villain for me. I love the taser face joke all the way through until the person I'm supposed to take as a threat is giggling at the guy saying his name. And I granted that's a good reaction to have, but it takes away from the ominous of her as a villain. And I was like, well, I'm not going to see her as a threat now after I watched her giggle at a name. But then he would triumph with these scenes of emotion or heart, like when you find out, that Ego had what he did to Peter's mother and Peter loses his mind. And I'm like, great. So what I'm trying to say is you can go from a tension to a joke to clear the palate. You can't go from a joke right back into tension, if that makes any sense. And he did that a couple of times where I was like, I don't like this. Try to dial it back for the scenes that you need. Otherwise, I really like this movie.
Now, see, for me, I really enjoyed that sort of stuff because they had already sort of established that tone from the previous movie. And I did not believe for a second that the Sovereign were going to be the quote-unquote legitimate threat in the movie. And again, one, I wasn't even aware that the Sovereign were a thing until I saw the movie, because again, I try to avoid as much as I can about the movie, and in their first space battle, where they're just like sending out the drones and they're all controlling them from back at the Sovereign base, when the, I did not take these Sovereign people seriously, when the sounds that they, or little things were making, were the sounds from Donkey Kong.
I get what you're saying, and I do, but that's the people, but the queen, I don't know how to explain it. It's the queen, the head honcho, and I don't even know if the Sovereign exists, Joe, to tell you the truth, because
right.
We'll get to what she creates down the line, blah, blah, blah. But the Sovereign are a group of aliens that I don't even know if they exist, because that's not where Adam Warlock comes from. But I'm just saying, I don't know. It's just like, I just would have liked at least her to be the, like, you could have those people on the video games being goofs and doing all their stuff. But to me, they were trying to make, so when they show up and it's a pivotal scene of fighting Ego, you're like, oh, they're just going to wipe those people out. It doesn't matter because I don't take any of this seriously.
Right.
And like you said, it doesn't ruin the movie for me, but at the time I'm like, oh, this should be a bigger scene. But it's like, no, because they're just going to turn and they're going to wipe these people out. And you've wasted the A villain. I get that.
Oh, right. Okay. But, so that's the other thing that I was going to get to was, Marvel has a tough time with the villains in their movies.
Mm-hmm.
But at least this did not devolve into the good guys fighting good guys.
I totally agree.
And while the Sovereign was not a serious threat, obviously Ego was a much more serious threat than anything else. And I did not know that Ego was the villain of the movie until about, like, halfway into Kurt Russell's appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, wait a minute. There's no real villain. Kurt Russell's maybe, like, the biggest star in the movie. I'm like, oh, Ego's gonna be the bad guy. I go, he's the bad guy. Like, you know, he's technically a bad guy in the comic book, so why wouldn't he be a bad guy here?
And, right, I kind of figured that out early on. I figured once we knew he was Ego the Living Planet, I knew it wasn't going to work well. Plus, regardless of from reading the comics, his father was never a nice guy either way. So I figured once the father was always a jerk, then you do the amalgam of his father, the Emperor, and Ego. I was like, villain. You know what I'm saying? That was my take the whole time. But I don't want you to think that I hate this movie. I love this movie. But that was my little nitpick. And the other small thing, and then I'll get to all the stuff that I love, is at times things were just a little too easy. Like when Yondu is using the whistle to kill all the Ravagers. Mm-hmm. I love that scene. Visually, James Gunn kills it in that scene. Literally.
Well, he's got his new fancy fin on.
He's got his new fancy fin on, which is fine. But once again, I never felt that as they were coming for Yondu and Rocket. Basically, what I want to say is there were times in the film where you have people coming for the Guardians or the character that I never felt anybody was in danger. So I was kind of like, okay, there's nothing here. Like, they're going to walk through this and beat everything and move on to the next scene. Like, I felt at times there was no challenge for the characters, if that makes any sense. But the character development and other stuff, and visually, the movie was amazing.
Right, and see, for me, that's where I hang my hat is, one is visually stunning movie, whether it be just scenes of people talking, or the action sequences, or a tiny baby tree dancing. All of these things were fantastic, and I love them. But it was all about the character development in this movie.
Right.
Everybody had something to do, which is something that can't be said about a lot of other Marvel ensemble movies.
Or ensemble movies all around. That seems to be a problem.
Where somebody gets something to do, but it's like, oh, we gotta give this guy something to do. Let's have him do this thing. But mm-hmm. everyone kind of had like a beginning, a middle, and end thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where here's how they are, a revelation about how they are, and a resolution of how they are. Everybody went through something like that, no matter how small or big that character is. And I thought that was, to take that sort of time to do that, was so impressive to me. Whether it be the main five Guardians of the Galaxy characters, Nebula, Mantis, but most importantly, Yondu. For me, but I'm a sucker for Michael Rooker.
Okay.
Yondu was maybe my favorite part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
His redemption, his character arc, everything about him in this movie, I loved.
Right.
He was fantastic.
Now, my take on that is I love Michael Rooker, and I think the best part about this movie was, like, obviously we talked about the character development, was the odd team-ups. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could have went like, you know, like Pat and just got these characters to get together. And I thought Rooker as Yondu and Rocket was a great side story. And then, but as great as that, you're a Rooker fan. My favorite was Drax and Mantis. To me, Mantis stole this movie. I was like, I love the whole, like, someone almost even more naive than Drax. And then the two of them together and all their scenes were fantastic. That to me was the pinnacle of this movie.
And okay, so then of course, you know, we talk about the redemption of Yondu, of course. He dies at the end of the movie. He sacrifices himself to save everyone. And he gets the Ravagers, I guess, funeral. But
Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to say, and that to me broke my heart in a good way.
Right.
That scene where he dies and then the Ravagers come and James Gunn's brother loses it.
Yeah.
I was the same way. I'm getting verklempt right now thinking about how awesome that scene was. But go ahead.
But how in the movies, the Ravagers are the original Guardians of the Galaxy from the comics.
Yes.
And how Sylvester Stallone is, what, Star? What was
I don't know. I was
like
never...
He was the original Star-Lord.
Right, but it was something else. I can't think of it, but go ahead. There's like Charlie 27, is there?
Starhawk.
What? Starhawk.
Right, so those original Guardians of the Galaxy, as Todd mentions, like, Yondu is there, Starhawk is there, Charlie 27 is there. Those guys, the original Guardians of the Galaxy, like those weird, goofy-looking designs, they're all in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're setting up, a reappearance of them.
Mm-hmm. And in the theater, I had my friend Scott was with me, and Scott is like, now granted, he likes the new Guardians, but Scott is an old school Guardians mark, like that Guardians, and I'm getting the elbow the whole time. Like, and he's like beaming like a grinning idiot. And I'm like, okay, that's really cool. Like that they do, like he had to explain it to me, but I gathered it once it all pieced together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool.
And the other thing is, Martin X, I think his name is, the crystal head guy.
Right.
That is fellow, James Gunn friend and, former comic book TV show actor Michael Rosenbaum.
That's right. Lex Luthor, he was for a while.
Because I knew Michael Rosenbaum was in the movie. That was one of the other things that got stooged off to me. But I didn't know who he was playing, and obviously there would have been no way for me to know who he was playing based on his special effects of having a giant crystal head.
Right, and Miley Cyrus was a voice, too, for one of the Guardians.
Really?
Yeah, the female one.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know those Guardians, but I found out that it was, I think in an uncredited role, was Miley Cyrus. So
I want to say I love this movie. Mm-hmm. Would see again, and I'm not sure if I would put it above the first one.
Right.
It's definitely exactly as good as the first one. I would probably need to see both again.
Mm-hmm.
Back to back to determine which one is better, if one is better. There's right. no shame in being just as good as the previous Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
No, there's not. And even for me, if it's slightly less, it's up there. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's a great movie. Like I said, I don't want you to think I didn't like it. I was just given a couple of nitpicky things. And we got a great Stan Lee cameo.
Yes, absolutely. And the callback to it in one of the five post-credit sequences.
The Watchers. Now, we've seen a lot of characters look like comic characters. Mm-hmm. Has anything looked more like the version from the comics than the Watchers?
The heads needed to be a little bit bigger, but absolutely.
I don't know. I think they had pretty big heads, but I'm going to say, but I was like, wow, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, to see all these post-credit sequences, and they were mostly just kind of fluff things, you know, Stan Lee, you know, explaining all of the previous things that he showed up in the Marvel Universe movies to the Watchers, and then him looking for a ride home as the post-credit sequence.
Right.
As you call him, James Gunn's brother, trying to use the fin to disastrous results to control the whistle thing that Yondu mm-hmm. does. Groot finally growing up a little bit, at least.
To angsty teenage Groot.
Angsty teenage Groot, of course. And then the two reveals for what would be coming in the next movie. One, Sylvester Stallone's Starhawk putting that version of the Guardians of the Galaxy back together. And then the Sovereign, I guess, creating Adam Warlock?
Yes, that's basically in Fantastic Four, it was a Earthbound group who had decided to take mankind's evolution to the blah, 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 and they created the pod, and he came out, and he was him. And then, I don't know, he did two appearances in Fantastic Four. I think he did two appearances in a Thor book, and then he was christened Adam Warlock. So I think they get away. I don't know how all the rules work with copyrights and stuff. So she creates them because they mentioned early on. And that was the one that I called. I leaned into my friend. I said, this is where Adam Warlock's coming from. First of all, they're all gold people. And when they said, oh, our people are created from pods, I was like, oh, he was created in a pod. And she makes a special one. And it looks just like the pod that was in the FF book. So I lost my mind. I'm a huge Adam Warlock fan, and I liked it. But I don't, you know, it's really close to the origin, but tweaked, like I said, because I think maybe it has something to do that origin was in FF. So, and she says, we're going to call him Adam. So boom, we have Adam Warlock.
Now, the other thing I want to mention from the credits. So as the actual credits themselves are rolling, and they're kind of almost like a high school yearbook,
mm-hmm.
with the pictures, and then like some of the pictures are being drawn on, and then some of the pictures they're like drawing faces on and stuff.
Right.
Did you see Jeff Goldblum as the Games Master in them as well?
Yes, that was his first appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right, because Howard the Duck is in this movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
He appears as one of the people in the credits, and then when Jeff Goldblum shows up in the credits, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, he wasn't in this movie.
Right. Wasn't Howard the Duck in the movie earlier, too?
Yes, he was in the movie. He was in that bar that Yondu was at, just like telling a story.
Right.
But then he was in the post-credit sequence as well.
And then I lost my mind, too, is because Cosmo shows up, too, in the post-credits.
That's correct. Or in Cosmo was in there as well.
With the Games Master. So I was like, there was a lot of throwbacks and nods. And I like the fact that people were like, oh, you should have had a Infinity Stone and Thanos. I think James Gunn, because he made the movie with the talking raccoon in the tree, a lot of money. And they lost Joss Whedon on Avengers because he walked away. They were kind of like, you know what? He did all this. Let him do what he wants. And this one seemed to be the most free of the Marvel movies, like not tied in whatsoever. And I think that helped. And a big reason why we've already heard him say, I'm all in on 3. I think they're giving him creative control because it doesn't touch on the Earth characters. Plus, he made them a lot of money on a property that they didn't think was going to make a lot of money.
Right. And obviously, worldwide, this didn't do Fast and the Furious numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it did. You know, I was talking to April about this, where domestic, it had $146 million opening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, its budget was $200 million and blah, 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 blah. But these two movies, and this is from another video that I watched about this, Red Letter Media, which I'm a big fan of. They had kind of talked about how the first movie, there was a script, and then James Gunn did a rewrite on it, so it's like credited as this other person and him. He's writer-director of the first one. He's writer-director of the second one.
Right.
So a lot of the fact that this has one, it seemingly has one solo creative vision.
Right.
That he's both the writer and director. What you're seeing up on the screen is what the creative force behind this wants. That it's, I'm sure there is things by committee in this movie. The fact that Groot is a baby the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes someone like a James Gunn to make that work.
Right. And I would just like to say two things about Groot. I love the opening dance scene with Baby Groot.
Yep.
It's by far one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And the other thing is, now that we have a teenage angsty Groot, I don't think that's going to last very long.
No, because I think that was just a throwaway to get him back to be the full-size guy for the next movie.
Not even for the Avengers movie.
Oh, that's right.
Right, because you really don't want teenage angsty Groot fighting alongside the Avengers. You want big, tall Groot everybody knows.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, I really, for a third movie, do not want to see angsty Groot. And then I thought about it. I was like, that's not going to happen. There's no, because that's after the Avengers movie. And there's even will we see Adam Warlock before the Avengers or the Infinity movies? Because he's a big part of that story. Could he show up as a cameo in Ragnarok?
He could.
Because his second appearance was in the Thor comics. So, you know, just doing that as a nod. So I don't know. My brain's all over the place with this movie, with Adam and cosmic characters. I love it.
Right. All right, so we've spoken quite a bit.
Yes, about we have.
About everything.
Many opinions were had.
Yes, go see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It's real good.
Right.
And is there anything else that we need to discuss? Or
I can't think of anything.
All right, so for Todd, this is Joe, closing out episode 345 of Longbox Heroes, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!